Welcome to Osteopathy Unplugged. I'm Steve Paulus Dio.
And I'm Bonnie Gintis Dio. We're American osteopathic physicians, and we're a married couple devoted to the practice and the study of osteopathic medicine. We developed Osteopathy Unplugged out of our passion for osteopathy and the recognition that our profession needs a more intimate conversation about who we are and what we do.
Join us as we sit in conversation, talking about the inner and outer workings of osteopathy. Welcome to episode 28, The Four Anatomies of Osteopathic Perception, a deeper dive part two, clinical examples. In episode 26, Bonnie introduced the interesting and practical concept of the four anatomies of osteopathic perception. If you haven't yet listened to this original concept, then we encourage you to do so in preparation for this deeper dive. In episode 27, we both answered and discussed many of the common questions that arose regarding the four anatomies of osteopathic perception in that first deeper dive installment. In this episode, we will focus on clinical examples of how the four anatomies viewpoint can help to make you better at sensing the necessity of your patients and providing the most supportive and effective treatments. This episode is directed towards osteopaths who are active in clinical practice and would like to better understand how to utilize the four anatomies pragmatically rather than just looking at them from a distant philosophic point of view. We are going to give a specific case history or general clinical outline, then present how the case could have been handled differently. Bonnie will then be presenting most of these examples, and we will both offer comments. Bon, let's begin by having you give us a few clinical vignettes where the outcome of the treatment might have been helped by a more accurate four anatomies perspective.
I'd like to offer several examples that illustrate treatments that didn't go well or didn't go as planned, but might have been different had the osteopath or the patient themselves considered the viewpoints of the four anatomies. These examples apply to both the way the osteopath considers the needs of their patients and the way that the patient in each example made choices in how they cared for themselves. Here's the first situation I'd like you to consider. Clinical example number one. I'll tell you in advance that this is a biological anatomy situation being approached unsuccessfully by a personal anatomy approach. In this scenario, a person who thinks they have an anxiety disorder and panic attacks chooses to go to psychotherapy, a personal anatomy approach, but finds out incidentally at a visit to see their primary care physician for another health issue that they have a heart arrhythmia. After they receive medical treatment for the cardiac problem, in this case an antiarrhythmic medication, they discover that their so-called anxiety resolves because it was a biological anatomy problem and not a primary personal emotional anxiety issue. This patient misinterpreted their symptoms and they inappropriately attempted to be treated by a personal anatomy approach when what they needed was biological anatomy treatment. We should acknowledge that, of course, a primary biological anatomy illness can and often does have a personal anatomy secondary reaction. This is an example of a body-mind issue. You might ask, how might this have played out differently if they had been to see an osteopath? That partly depends on who the osteopath is, how they trained, and how they practice, as well as what country they're living in. Many different scenarios might have played out. Osteopathic treatment itself might have positively influenced their cardiac arrhythmia and caused it to improve without mainstream medication. There are a wide variety of osteopathic approaches that address the neuromusculoskeletal influence on heart rate and regularity. Or the osteopath might have noticed that the physical findings didn't change with the treatment, and this might have motivated them to refer their patient for medical evaluation and treatment.
I agree with everything you've said, and I'd like to add an additional osteopathic component. I always treat T1 through T5 primarily on the left in all cardiac conditions or illnesses. In this instance, osteopathic manipulation isn't the primary treatment, but is a complementary treatment. Let me give a common example in my practice. If we have an elderly individual with atrial fibrillation with an intermittent rapid ventricular response, they're on anticoagulants, but they don't tolerate the antiarrhythmic medications and don't qualify for ablation therapy. In this instance, osteopathic manipulation can significantly help to decrease the frequency of rapid ventricular response and also minimize the extremes of tachycardia. Osteopathic manipulation in this instance can offer a significant palliative effect that, in my experience, increases the quality of life for this individual.
Yeah. I want to add that this person might have gone to a cosmic anatomy-oriented osteopath for treatment, and that might have complemented the management of this person's cardiac arrhythmia. There's a lot of overlap in the cosmic and the biological, and it's also possible that there are things we just don't know how to measure that affect our mysterious and complex living human bodies. Steve, why don't you introduce clinical example number two?
I'd like to offer a companion example to clinical example number one of a patient being told that she had an anxiety disorder with panic attacks, a personal anatomy issue, by both her social worker and psychiatrist, but in reality had a complicated biological anatomy issue. In my practice in Vermont, I've developed a special interest in genetic connective tissue disorders, including hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, as well as dysautonomia disorders, such as postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS. I've become the primary specialist in Vermont and upstate New York who diagnoses and to some extent manages people with these complicated medical conditions. Approximately 40% of women with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome also have some variable presentation of POTS or dysautonomia. In POTS, there's an inborn dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system, causing the adrenaline-based sympathetic nervous system to wildly overreact. These individuals have a baseline low blood pressure, get dehydrated easily, and feel faint or have frequent episodes of passing out or near syncope episodes. In certain orthostatic situations, their heart rate goes through the roof. It may increase from 70 beats per minute to 120 beats per minute, and it feels to them like they're having a panic attack when they're not. Once I make the diagnosis of POTS by performing an active stand test, and then reveal to them that most of their so-called panic attack symptoms are just a malfunctioning nervous system caused by their genetic connective tissue disorder, they're relieved. They're not just relieved, but are empowered and no longer feel so helpless.
In cases like this, the patients realize that they're having an emotional response to their physiology.
Or an emotional interpretation.
Right, and they can let go of it because they realize where it's coming from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I point out for these individuals that most, perhaps not all, of what they call an anxiety disorder can be managed, but not cured, by lifestyle changes, dietary treatments, and sometimes targeted prescription medications that are cardiac drugs, not anti-anxiety prescription medications.
Right. This can be incredibly empowering for someone who's felt overwhelmed by this condition.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to clinical example number three. It's yours, Bon.
Okay. The following examples are all of primarily cultural anatomy origin. Many of these situations involve a fashion-induced problem, and fashion is part of the cultural anatomy. Now, secondarily, the biological anatomy or biomechanical ramifications of these fashion choices are ultimately what create the problem. The episode you've been listening to just faded out because you are not yet a subscriber to Osteopathy Unplugged. Please visit patreon.com/osteopathyunplugged and become a subscriber in order to have full access to the rest of this episode as well as the complete collection.
We have created a set of foundational episodes that will be available for free for everyone. These teachings provide an introduction to osteopathic clinical philosophy. However, the full versions of all episodes are only available through Patreon. Access Patreon through their app or through a browser page. Thank you for listening to Osteopathy Unplugged.
And thank you for your interest in the osteopathic experience.
Until next time, be well, listen deeply, and stay curious.